Okay, why don't you just tell me how your New Year's been so far? Get a level?
It's been pretty good. I just got back from the Everglades conference.
Oh, fantastic. Sir, let me go ahead and start then. You need a second, or are you ready to go?
No, whenever you're ready.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Drew Martin. Drew, do I say Drew Martin of the Sierra Club, or what other lofty and noble goals and titles do you wear, sir?
Well, I'm also the Secretary Treasurer of the Palm Beach County Soil and Water Conservation District.
Excellent.
That is an elected position, and I also serve with the AFCD, and that's the Association for Conservation Districts in the state of Florida.
Excellent, sir. So, Drew, what's new?
Well, we just finished our Everglades Coalition Conference, which was attended by Lisa Jackson, Governor Scott, the Secretary, Assistant Secretary for Army, and the Deputy Secretary for Agriculture, and the Assistant Secretary for Fish and Wildlife and Parks.
I don't want to sound overly cynical, but I understand that Governor Scott noticed that we have an environment.
Well, the governor has been slow to come to the party as far as environmental protection is concerned, and I don't think he's fully arrived yet. But the governor is at least aware that the public wants a clean environment, and the governor is beginning to at least pay lip service to the environment. The governor has attempted to resolve an outstanding issue with the federal judge on cleanup of the Everglades.
So are state funds still being expended to fight for a dirty environment?
Well, I mean, the state's spending a lot less money than it did even under Governor Jeb Bush. So there's a minimal amount of money. The governor has asked for $40 million. It's questionable whether the legislature will give him $40 million. That the legislature has to decide on how much to appropriate for the Everglades. But it's not just that. The other issue is the legislature cut a great deal of money out of the water management districts. They reduced their budget significantly by not allowing them to tax as much as they had before. Now, it did save ratepayers or taxpayers a small amount of money. But unfortunately, that was the money that the water districts had used to fund Everglades restorations. So we see basically what's happening is that they're really pulling a lot of money out of the process, as well as the state already having a budget deficit of $2 billion. And when asked if the governor would continue to purchase land, which is important to restore the Everglades, and the reason for that is the goal ultimately is to reestablish the natural sheet flow from Lake Okeechobee to Everglades National Park. Everglades National Park is actually a very isolated area in the state of Florida. It's been isolated by a number of decisions. One was the decision to build a number of roads which blocked the water moving south.
Right.
The federal government is attempting to rectify that decision by elevating a portion of Tamiami Trail. Tamiami Trail is basically a dam for water moving south.
Right.
Water is trapped north of Tamiami Trail. At the same time, the federal government, under the Army Corps of Engineers, built a berm around Lake Okeechobee. That berm basically stopped water from flowing out. They replaced the flow of water south with water flowing into the two estuaries, the Caloosahatchee and the St. Lucie, primarily into the Indian River Lagoon. And then there's some other areas that drain water. There's the C-51 that drains into Lake Worth Lagoon. But what they've done is they've starved the area south of the lake, which is now agricultural land. Well, the damage that is doing is that it is causing the land to sink. And the reason the land is sinking is the land depended upon being very hydrated. That was a very hydrated piece of land. That's why when the first Europeans came, they thought the area was very fertile because they saw all these plants growing out there. But that was a bit of a myth, because the reality was the soils were very dependent on the hydrology. When they took the water away and drained the land for agriculture, they basically began to starve the land of nutrients and starve the land of its muck soils. So what we have now is the land has begun, it has oxidized over the last 40 or 50 years, and it's began to subside, and we've lost a significant amount of soil. Now, the best management practices have greatly improved, and so now we see, you know, the land is not hydrating quite as, is not subsiding quite as poorly, because now we have best management practices that require the farmers to keep some water on the land. But still, we need to reestablish this movement of water south. It also causes a great deal of damage to the estuaries, because when we flush the lake out during a hurricane or a tropical storm, that fresh water is very nutrient loaded and causes a lot of damage to the estuaries, and we get a lot of problems with things like algal blooms because of the fertilizers and nutrients that have been deposited in the lake over the last 700 years.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, so the governor cut back funds, the legislator cut back funds. He suggested that maybe they should give some more money. Clearly not as much as has been lost overall. Do you think, beyond the exciting feature of having the legislature in session, and of course we'll know by the end of that where that's going, were there any legislators present in that Everglades conference? Was there any political muscle, do you think, behind continuing to try to restore this water flow?
The problem we have right now is the Republican Party has taken a very anti-environmental trend. And it's very sad, because Republicans were not... environmentalism was always a non-partisan issue if you go back to Nixon and before. In fact...
conservation. I mean, conservation. It,
right.
It sort of makes some kind of sense.
Right. So Republicans were not anti-conservation. In fact, there was a portion of Republicans, if you go back to the Theodore Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt, there was actually a portion of Republicans that were conservation-minded. But unfortunately, the modern Republican Party has moved towards the lowest common denominator, and a lot of the populist sentiment in the Republican Party are people that basically see the environment as something you strip mine. The environment is something you used until it's destroyed, and then you just move to another piece of land, and they consider that under the term of property rights. And one of the reasons the Republicans are so big on states' rights is they see states as being much less willing to protect the environment than the federal government. And I can assure you, if the federal government was less environmentally minded, they would be for federal government. They simply don't want anyone to tell them anything, and you have a multitude of people that have come together, from the NRA that thinks that lead shot is a good idea. Lead shot has proven to be very dangerous to animals, and many people have thought that we should move on to a different type of bullets. But you have a number of people like the NRA that insist on lead shot. Then you have people that, ORV folks, that want to be able to go out and basically just drive over the environment anywhere. They don't care if they drive over a nest, a bird nest on a beach, or if they pile through a panther den. They just think they should be able to go anywhere, and they don't like any kind of restriction. You have people who own giant corporations like the coal operators in West Virginia who think you should just be able to blow up a beautiful mountainscape and destroy it and then mine it and leave, you know, a pile of rocks in the nearest stream bed. You have people up in Canada that are doing this tar sands, where they basically take a beautiful boreal forest and they destroy it with bulldozers and leave nothing but toxic ponds. And it goes on and on and on. This group of people who, for short-term economic gain, see the environment as something to be destroyed, mined, looted, and then they move on to the next piece of property, living in some gated community or some high-rise in Manhattan.
It's a sobering reality, and unfortunately, since the legislature is largely in the pocket of these people, it is a stimulating challenge for those of us who think that we actually live on this planet. But let me ask you on a related issue. Since there is a finite resource of water, I was wondering if you could address the issue of water potability, and saltwater intrusion. Are you up on some of that information?
Yes, I'm very familiar with that topic, and I have attended a number of meetings on the Water Resource Task Force here in Palm Beach County. Basically, what's happened is Florida is a very water-rich environment. It has been, but Florida has two seasons. One is wet and one is dry. And what had happened in the old days before we came, and I refer to us as we, or as Europeans, because we're the ones who seem to modify the environment the most. We didn't like the idea that water sat on the land, because what happened is when it rained in Florida, most of the water sat on the land, and it moved. It then began to gradually move southward,
right,
and out to the coast. But it did it in a very slow manner, so that as the seasons would change and the season would go from wet to dry, the water would still be present. And the water was so present on the land that it would seep into the limestone, which we all are on stand on a very porous limestone. And the water sat in that limestone. It sat on the surface, and we saw springs like we see in North Florida. We saw beautiful lakes like Lake Okeechobee, which was crystal clear. And then we saw what was known as the River of Grass, or the Everglades ecosystem, which covered about a third of the state. And that was just a slow-moving river. And Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, who wrote River of Grass, was the first to really realize that it wasn't just a marsh of water sitting stationary, but water slowly moving. And as it moved south, it would move all the way, and then it would move off the coast, and it created an ecosystem that was a combination of fresh and salt water that was very pure. Well, that water was also our aquifer that we drank. And when people first came here, there was an excess of fresh water. In fact, Lake Worth Lagoon would have been fresh water. Any river lagoon would have been fresh water. They wouldn't have been salt water most of the time. So people didn't worry about it. There was just so much water. They dumped their raw sewage into the lagoons. Ultimately, the lagoons couldn't be used for drinking water. They had to be flushed out. That's why we opened the inlets originally. And then they began, as they didn't allow water to sit on the land, as they drained it, they began to slowly drain the aquifer. And as the aquifer became drained of fresh water, the salt water pushed its way in from the coast, and that's why we have saltwater intrusion. Today we have a combination of salt water pushing in and fresh water, depending upon how much water we're receiving in rainfall.
Where do we stand right now? Obviously, I'm sure there are records of some sort that at least maybe go back to the 40s or 50s. How is that march of intrusion coming along? I've heard some very silly statements by developers and their client scientists who said, "Oh, we can just keep developing these counties. There's no limit." When in fact, any kind of rational thinking realizes you can only put so many straws and draw so much water out of the aquifer, while at the same time putting more and more septic tanks in the ground.
Right, and the septic tanks, of course, are polluting the groundwater, which is a separate issue. The legislature is now trying to remove a requirement that septic tanks even be inspected every 7 or 8 years to correct whatever pollution they're sending out. Well, the problem is that the water management districts were established. Originally, soil and water conservation districts were your basic water quality districts. They were, the state eventually established what were called water management districts. And those water management districts, which are around the state, here we have the South Florida water management districts, their job was twofold. One was to assure quality of water, and they give out what are called environmental resource permits when somebody wants to destroy wetlands or damage water quality. And the other thing they gave out, and they still give out, are what are known as consumptive use permits. Everybody who uses water in the state of Florida at some point has a consumptive use permit. You and I have one through our utilities. Other people get one through the districts directly, such as golf courses and agricultural interests. The problem has been that political lobbying has made it difficult for the water districts to ever turn down a consumptive use permit, and now they want to go to the point of even giving people 50-year permits, which of course becomes almost a water right. No one in Florida today has a right to the water. Everybody has to share it. But if you give out these consumptive use permits, it very much depends on who does the mathematics. Excuse me. So if the mathematics is done by somebody who's pro-development, they simply make the numbers look like there's plenty of water. The problem is that because Florida can go through droughts and go through rainy periods, there are times when there's more water and times when there's less. But if a consumptive use permit requires a certain amount of water and you get to a point where there's a drought, then you have people beginning to fight over that water, and that's where the problem will come. Right now, there's also a problem is that environmental needs are often the last on the list, and so when there's a very dry period, you may have problems where the Coosatchee River, for instance, which needs a certain minimal freshwater flow, doesn't get any freshwater flow for 6 or 7 months. And then they have problems of stagnant water, which turns into algal blooms, which are toxic to human beings and animals.
Do you know off the top of your head where we stand right now in terms of the rainy season? Are we on the dry side or are we on the wet side?
Well, we had a wet October, which was good. But, you know, most of the water we use is not used for drinking or bathing. It's used for watering our lawns or for agriculture. So the real problem is that there's a great debate going on now because we had a wet season, fairly wet October. We had a very dry summer and spring last year. But the debate right now is not about whether people can have enough water to drink. The debate is whether people should be on some water restrictions when it comes to watering their yards. And this is a big fight because landscaping interests think that people should water 7 days a week or 6 days a week or 5 days a week. And there's a certain part of the population that doesn't realize water is finite. And you'll see them. If you drive down the street, you'll always see somebody who's got their sprinklers just pouring down the drain. And those people can use a lot of water. We also have people who have giant mansions in Palm Beach that use millions of gallons of water because they built extravagant tropical rainforest environments that need to be watered constantly. So we have a portion of the population that are using far more water than they should be or need to. And if we compare our water usage, we're in the hundreds of gallons per individual per day, and some countries are in the area of a gallon and a half to 2 or 3 gallons per day. So we are using excessive amounts of water on landscaping. And that's really what the argument is. Many people, such as myself, think we need to get rid of sod. Sod is very poor. It blocks water moving into the ground because its roots are too thick. If it's overwatered, it's basically no different than having cement. It looks nice because people are accustomed to wanting to see a green yard, but sod is a great waster of water. It also, when people put chemicals on sod, it tends to wash off and it creates nutrient problems and in our canals and waterways, which is another problem. So we need to move away from this idea that we can water our lawns excessively and have landscapes that look like something out of New England. We live in a state that has dry times, and we cannot afford to have things like green sodded lawns.
Well, that's interesting to know. Let me ask you this. Obviously, there's a whole lot of pushback on that kind of intelligent resource management. So I'm sure that's a pretty much a thankless task, however important it is. Let me ask you this. If you look at the year ahead, the issues of 2012, what should those people who are environmentally aware, what issues should they be looking for? Where would you like to ask for our support?
Well, the places we need to look for, first of all, there's an argument going on between the Environmental Protection Agency and the state. We need to have people lobby to let the federal government establish what are called strict nutrient standards, a nutrient standard that is numeric. A numeric standard means that you have to go to that water body and you actually test the water to see what the numbers are. And if they violate a certain set of numbers, then somebody is in noncompliance and you begin to ask people to clean up their act. Right now, the state is fighting that vigorously, basically the agricultural interests and the utilities, because they don't want any kind of a strong nutrient standard, which is numeric. So that's the first thing. The state's trying to weaken those standards. So people need to lobby for strong standards. People need to lobby the legislature to require a test on septic tanks at least once every 6 or 7 years. It's ridiculous that people don't have to. If you're going to have a septic tank, it's like a car. It needs to be serviced. And there's nothing, you know, it's not socialism to ask people to take care of their personal property. If someone has a septic tank and it's not being taken care of, it's polluting the entire neighborhood. That's the second thing. The third thing is we need to have stronger growth management laws. And one thing that's happened in Florida is the legislature has basically gone about dismantling a very good growth management law. Florida had created some 20, 30 years ago something called the Department of Community Affairs. The Department of Community Affairs required that large developments, and these are developments that move over county and city lines called developments of regional impact, had to go to the state to be reviewed, because you can't trust the local governments. Local councils, local commissions are basically owned by developers. And so if you leave the decision in local politicians' hands on large developments, get development everywhere. So that's something else people can do, and that's to lobby for the state to recreate some sort of a Department of Community Affairs. Also, we need to get people in our local politicians to stop approving developments when we're sitting on a huge number of foreclosures. Right now, we don't need any more large developments. The state needs to take a rest, and we need to preserve the existing agricultural lands we have and the existing wetlands we have. We don't need new roads into areas that aren't currently unroaded, and that's another issue that's coming up, and that is the state has a plan to try to basically put roads everywhere, but Florida is dependent on leaving certain areas alone, particularly for our panthers and black bears and large animals that need to move around. A panther needs about 200 square miles, a male panther, and they get killed on roads. So we don't want roads in every corner of the state. We want to see the state left the way it is now, develop in the areas people already live, and leave other areas open for ranching, agriculture, preservation, and natural wildlife.
Well, Drew, I can't thank you enough. Thanks so much for your information. It's invaluable. And please, anytime you've got some information you'd like to share, don't hesitate to let us know. That's Drew Martin with this excellent report on Florida's environment. Thanks again, Drew.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate everything you're doing to get the word out.
Okay, thanks again. Bye-bye. Okay.